Good morning, Oregon, and thank you for loading me down and queuing me up once again. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Full details are at offbeatoregon.com. Check it out. But first, sit back and relax and let me tell you the story of the used oxen dealership of the Grand Ronde Valley. You know, stories about Native Americans from the old days on the Oregon Trail and times like that are usually the story of a grand tragedy, some sort of awful thing. They're usually getting screwed, and frankly, it's kind of nice every now and then to see them get a little bit of their own back, especially if nobody gets hurt. And this is that kind of story. I love this story. It was first published on December 21st, 2009, under the headline 1840s, Grand Ronde Valley was Oregon Trail's Oasis. Used oxen dealership. Okay, here we go. In the midst of some of the roughest and least hospitable country in the West, the Grand Ronde Valley is a bit like an oasis. Or at least that's how it seemed to the emigrant parties who came through, headed for the Willamette Valley on the Oregon Trail. The valley itself follows the Grand Ronde River through northeast Oregon, surrounded by the Blue Mountains with the Wallowas to the east and what's now the Eagle Cap Wilderness to the south. It's actually surprisingly tiny, maybe 15 miles wide and 35 miles long, but for hundreds of generations, it's been known to locals as a highly productive little Garden of Eden. It was an especially important part of the Oregon Trail from the 1840s on up until the Civil War broke out. Once an emigrant party had made it to the Grand Ronde Valley, it had straggled across hundreds of miles of the Great Plains, crossed the Continental Divide in Wyoming, and thrashed through hundreds more miles of the Rocky Mountains and the blistering, arid Snake River Desert in Idaho, throughout which they were constantly fighting off attacks by hostile Indian tribes. By the time a party got to this tiny, fertile valley, it was typically pretty played out. This was more applicable to the animals than to the people. After all, the people could rest when they needed to, sitting on the wagon while the oxen dragged it up yet another mountain pass. But those oxen, when they got skinny from lack of forage, and unhealthy from lack of rest, and exhausted from too much work, nothing the immigrants could give them on the trail would help them recover. What they needed was a month on good grass with no load behind them. They needed to be pastured. They needed to rest. And that is where the local Native Americans in the region could help. For a fee, of course. The Nez Perce, Cayuse, Walla Walla, and Umatilla tribes had no use for oxen, except maybe for the occasional bad winter when better meats were unavailable, but they quickly figured out that they could make a lot of money on them. These tribes would take skinny, exhausted draft animals off the emigrants' hands for basically 50% of their value. Then they'd equip the party with fresh draft animals and send them on their way to the Willamette Valley. Where did the fresh oxen come from? Last year's emigrants, of course. The Indians had bought exhausted oxen from last year's travelers and pastured them out on the lush grasslands of the Grand Ronde Valley. A year later, they were fresh and ready to take a new crop of emigrants west across the rest of the mountains to the Willamette Valley. And there were another 300 miles or so of Blue Mountains, Cascade Range, and terrifying river voyages still ahead before the parties would get there. It was a classic win-win situation. Emigrant parties whose livestock would never have pulled through got a fresh set, and the tribes got a nice revenue stream, plus a supply of emergency food for the winter. And best of all, with their customers desperate, the Native Americans could charge almost anything they liked for their fresh oxen. The wonder isn't that they marked them up 100%, it's that they didn't mark them up more. Of course, that didn't stop some of the emigrants grumbling about it. Quote, "The Nez Perce can beat a Yankee peddler in a trade," one exasperated and out-of-pocket emigrant groused. I don't think I mentioned, they not only would they give the emigrants 50 cents on the dollar for their skinny, exhausted animals, but they would charge them double to replace them. So they were getting them coming and going, and they were doing nicely. Well, that's it for today's episode. If you're listening for the first time and want more information about Offbeat Oregon, you can get everything at our central website at offbeatoregon.com. It's about 180 columns going back to 2008 when I first started doing these, plus links to audio and text feeds on RSS and iTunes, and links to the Facebook page and Twitter feed if you'd like to get in on the conversation online. There's even a link to the Amazon page for my book, Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, which just came out last month, and which, if you enjoy these podcasts, I think you'll like. You should check it out. The website is also where you'll find the full citations of sources for this story, which for today's episode include works by Bill Gulick and Trisha Wagner. Our theme music is a track titled Old Man's Waltz by the Atlas String Band, written by Carmen Ficarra. Coming to Corvallis? Drop me a line. Let's grab a cup of coffee. I love geeking out with fellow history buffs. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. That's it for today. So thanks for listening and have a great day.